Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 46. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Hoth. A little chilly out there, if you will. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey everyone, what's up?
I don't think they can respond and hear you.
Well, but they can reply on Twitter or something.
Yeah, that's true. They could respond. Mm. Hey, and we also have one of our new hosts with us today. Welcome, Caitlin.
Hey, what's up?
What's with the ups? I don't get it. Okay.
Maybe it's like a British-Canadian like thing.
Commonwealth.
I will say this. We're going to get through this intro eventually, but I will say every time when someone says what's up, I go, the ceiling, the sun. I always like take it literally, or I guess factually, because you can't really use literally for that anymore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook page, or send us an email through our website at resistanceradio.net. You can also leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And not just Star Wars audiobooks, but, you know, any audiobook you want. Also, we have t-shirts and buttons available on our website, so check those out. And also, this week is open nominations for the Star Wars Podcast Awards. Feel free to go ahead and kind of nominate your favorite Star Wars podcast. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. I'm poking all of you guys. Resistance Radio, you know, Mikey as a host, Danya. Yeah. But yeah, go to check out StarWarsPodcastAwards.com and go ahead and nominate us and any of your other favorite Star Wars podcasts. And, you know, even if you don't nominate us, just nominate your favorite Star Wars podcast.
Again, go show them some love.
Yep. StarWarsPodcastAwards.com. So,
it's really cute. I like the website layout. I'm probably going to nominate some stuff. Like, yeah, maybe JodoCast.
JodoCast. If they're nice to me. Evan's on here fairly often. That's good. I like JodoCast. I like Blob of the Hutt, too. So.
Yeah, I like them. I met them at Star Wars Celebration in the summer. They're nice.
But I like them. They're nice. I also like a couple of different Star Wars podcasts. But yeah, check it out. You know, nominate your favorite podcast, Resistance Radio. But we also have our newest co-host on, Caitlin. And since it's your first episode, I know, tradition, tell us a little bit about you and Star Wars and why you love Star Wars.
So I was probably about 6 when my dad introduced my brother and I to Star Wars. I don't really remember a time when I didn't know about the Jedi or that Darth Vader was Luke's father. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. Sorry. I have a lot of good family memories about Star Wars, and so, in other words, like the Star Wars, or the Skywalkers, it's a family thing, but without the dramatics and the incest. But there's definitely lightsaber wielding. Just gonna, make that done. Perfectly
just
clear.
Going. Just keep going. Okay, I like that. Anything else, or is that it? Not the incest.
Yeah, not the incest, and but there was a lot of lightsaber fights.
Growing up, I got that. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Luke Skywalker broke a TV when I was really young. I felt really bad that Luke did it.
even like my brother had like the Darth Maul like double ended lightsaber.
Oh, those
were
cool.
Those were really cool.
Those we had a blue one. We had a green one.
You had all of the colors.
I know what
that is. All right. Well, welcome. We are excited to have you here and join us, as often as you can be here. But let's move on to the news. We got some interesting Solo Cup style stories. The Han Solo Cup film. Sorry, I just couldn't.
Now that song's going to be stuck in my head.
Han Solo Cup.
Okay. I lift you up.
Yeah, exactly. So, did you guys see the tweet when it went out, or did you guys see the post afterwards?
I saw the post when it went up on Hyperbole, but I did not see it. I'm on like a social media sabbatical right now, so I haven't really touched anything since the beginning of the week. So a lot of stuff is going to be like brand new to me this week, because it hasn't been on Hyperbole, I haven't really seen it. Which is interesting. It's been a very interesting week in that respect. Like, not knowing things, like, immediately as they happen. It's been odd.
All right. Well, so, around... I'm looking it up right now. So, January 30th, in the morning-ish, you know, midday, Chris Miller, one of the directors for the Han Solo film, made a tweet, and it said three words, Han first shot. There's so many layers of puns in this thing, if you will. But, you know, it's obviously related to the, you know, Han shot first, or Greedo, or, you know, that whole debate, which we could talk about one day, but not right now, but not in as much detail. But he has a picture of his clapboard with time code and all this fun stuff, and it says Star Wars Red Cup, which is the name, or the, you know, the code name that they're using for this film, as they film at different locations and stuff like that. So obviously, Red Cup, to those people who are not in the U.S., that is a very common cup from, I'm the only one in the U.S. here that's on the show right now, but the Red Cup is made by a company called Solo, aka the Solo Cup, Red Solo Cup, and Red Cup is Han Solo, get it,
I really knew properly what, like, the Red Solo Cup thing was, because I didn't really know completely what it was when Glee was airing. That's what really taught me what a Red Solo Cup was. Yeah.
And they're drinking from a Red Solo Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really know exactly what it was before then. I was just like, I don't understand why people go crazy over these things. I don't get it. And then I was like, oh, it's because everyone's drinking and really, really drunk. That now makes so much more sense.
Well, I will tell you this. As a geek, looking at the clapboard here, you know, I can see, you know, obviously the very first shot that they're doing here, they're shooting in 6K resolution, 24 frames per second. The aperture was set at 2.8 with a 45 millimeter lens, with a shutter angle of 172.8. So, like, for me, like, this is, like, I understand all this stuff, and I think that's awesome, and I'm super excited. So anyone else who's a camera gearhead filmmaker out there, if you guys want to geek out with me, you can tweet at me or something. But this picture really, like, made me really smile when it first came out, and I've been kind of waiting all week to talk about it. So I'm just really ecstatic that they've now started to film this. We're going to have episode 8 this year, and next year we're going to have the new Han Solo film. And there was also another picture. I don't think I saw it. I didn't put it in the notes, but I don't know if you guys saw it. Did you guys see the picture of Lando meeting Lando, aka Donald Glover, talking to Billy Newman?
No, you mentioned it. In our Facebook chat earlier, and I was like, "What the hell is he talking about?" So I googled it, because again, I've been off social media, and I was like, "What the hell is Mikey talking about?" And then found it, and I was like, "Okay, one, awesome picture. Two, slightly creepy that someone is sneakily taking a picture of them while they're eating food."
Well, like I think about, all right, so here's the thing, it's like, if, all right, I'm going to tell you this. If I was in the same restaurant as Billy Dee Williams and Donald Glover, I would probably go talk to them. I know it would be... Okay, so here's the reason why. Okay, have you guys seen Big Bang Theory? Do you watch Big Bang Theory at all?
Yes.
Do you guys know the... All right, it's all right if you don't like it.
There's a
scene in Big Bang Theory where Sheldon goes to talk to James Earl Jones.
Oh, yes.
Do you know that scene?
Yeah.
If you don't know that scene, So, and he's like, I like Star Wars too. And James Earl Jones just totally embraces Sheldon. Like, I can only imagine that one, Billy Dee Williams would be exactly the same way. And Donald Glover, come on, it's Donald Glover. Like, it'd be, Donald and Billy in the morning. Like, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. Like, I would love to be like, hey, yeah, come sit down, join us. Like, I feel like that's what it would be. Probably really so wouldn't happen that way. But that's
Mikey's gone into his little dreamland.
Okay. But so here's the thing is, like, I would at least do what the person in the picture is doing. He is taking a selfie of himself, a fake selfie of himself, to get a picture of those two guys.
Yeah.
Like, and you can see they're just hanging out, man. They're like, yeah, what's up? So
it's just like the least subtle picture ever, because they clearly, if they caught sight of him doing that, they're like, oh, we know what he's doing.
Well, you know what's really funny is you can see that there's two people doing the selfie. Like, the guy on the right hand side of the picture, it's his camera, mm-hmm. you can tell it's from. And then you see his friend who's also trying to take a selfie too of the same thing. So it's definitely not subtle. But we also saw a picture of Harrison Ford and was it Alden Ehrenreich? I never get his name right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was creepy too.
A while ago. Yeah, it was definitely creepy. Because again, they're fan photos and stuff like that, so they're kind of creepy. But this made me very happy, just thinking about the Han Solo film and this right here. So, you know, and this came out.
I mean, I'm excited about Donald Glover. Does that count?
Yeah, because it's Donald Glover. So you're excited about the film, right? And seeing a young Millennium Falcon, it's going to run better. Tanya, this is what's going to happen. You're going to like this film so much, and you're going to be like, you're right. I'm sorry. I was so down on the film. It's going to be amazing, and it's going to be awesome. Because it's Han Solo. It's going to be like a Fast and
Furious.
Are we
going to take bets on this? Caitlin, are you our intermediary here?
All right, let's do this. I say Han Solo film is going to be awesome. It's going to be crazy good. There you go. Crazy good. There you go.
I think it's going to be crazy good. I think it is going to be okay. And I think that Lando is probably going to be the best part about it.
Now, here's the question. What's the who defines it? Because you can both watch it and have completely different opinions.
I'm going to be the one that defines it, honestly. Who would want to argue with me, right?
We need a neutral party.
All right.
Caitlin, you're going to have to decide for us.
You
can
be the neutral party. But I'm going to tell you this. Like, how can you go wrong with a film that's going to have Chewbacca in it? All right, that was really sad. You guys have made me very sad on this show. Let's move on to other news, okay? Let's just move on.
Sorry, Mikey.
It's all right. So there was something that was really odd this week and when I was looking for news. And this one I had to put in here. Rain Johnson shares a song. Was it in Twitter that he shared it in? Yeah, he shared it in Twitter about a song. The Mountain Goats recorded a song about a Jedi eating other Jedi, and all that's left are bones.
No. Eating other Jedi's bones, like not the fleshy bits, just the bones, because that's where all the calcium is.
Okay, yeah. I listened to it.
I did listen to the song. Yes,
it's an acoustic guitar, so it's not bad or anything like that. I may or not, you know, put that underneath while we're talking right now. But it's interesting. And the one thing that really got me though is that Mr. Johnson said, "Oh, now this is new canon. What if this Jedi that ate other Jedi's bones is Snoke?"
Oh my god.
Ba-dum-bum.
Hashtag your Snoke theory sucks.
All right. I kind of figured as much, but you know, it's just interesting. Obviously, the whole term canon is thrown around a bunch, and the only person I believe that anything is canon is probably from Pablo Hidalgo now. But really, this is an interesting story. It's worth taking a listen to because it's kind of funny.
Pretty funny.
Anyway, it was really just like out. It was kind of just out there, you know, news wise. But it was fun, you know. Especially you have to understand right now that you know, Episode 8 is in editorial. Yeah. He's spending a lot of time in a small room, going a little crazy. I can imagine this coming out of something like that. So it's
the
not
bit,
bad.
The bit that cracked me up. Like I was like, this is like really weird, but okay. The bit that got me and I was just like, I started laughing all the way through to the end was like, after the bit where it's like, something about all the Jedi bones piled high like parsnips on his plate, and then it was like, the long feast will be filmed for mass consumption. The cameras Rian's got these days are unimaginably high res. And I was like, I was just gone. I was like, I was laughing so much. I was like, what? what is this? I love it, but also this is a little ridiculous, but it's
a little fourth wall breaking and everything, so it was
a little
good. All right, a little, it was on the nose. Beyond that, there was also a really good interview with Mark Hamill that came out, talking about a lot of different things, but he was also discussing his the opportunity he had in The People versus George Lucas, when they were interviewing him, and how kind of Jake Lloyd was treated just so badly. Now, whether you like the prequels or not, like, I remember Jake Lloyd from Jingle All the Way, and I remember seeing news footage of him when he got the part of Anakin Skywalker, and they showed him, you know, he's a little kid. I was probably only a couple years older than Jake Lloyd, like 4 years older. But it's one of those things where I remember seeing him in the news, and they showed him when he first found out the part. He was on his front lawn playing with a lightsaber, you know, and I was just like, that is so cool. I wish I could be this kid. And people just ripped into Jake Lloyd and the prequels. Like, don't get me wrong, I do like, so I pick on some of his lines, but it's not him I'm picking on. I'm picking on the dialogue. Especially like my person, which, and my name is Anakin, just because it's done perfectly as a little kid, so I love it. But yeah, Mark Hamill had a really good argument here. Did you guys see this interview?
I did, and I completely get where he's coming from. Like, completely get it, and also feel exactly the same.
Well, yeah, because like there's a line in there where he talks about not just that they didn't like the movies, they talk like they rant about how bad his acting was, and like think whatever you will about like episode one, I never once thought ill of the actor himself. It was more like I always just kind of went like, oh, the dialogue or the storyline or whatever you might have problems with, but it was never with the acting.
Yeah. Well, and even then, like, the acting is worse in, you know, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, especially when you have full-on adult actors that you know are really good actors, and that's just how it comes down to. George Lucas has always been a very technical director, and I remember there's an article somewhere that was talking about how George would only do one take, which is what he did in film school and what he did with, you know, A New Hope. But at this time, you know, he had millions of dollars behind him. He can do multiple takes, let the actors really figure it out. But it was Natalie Portman who said, by the third film, I finally figured out how George directed. And I had to practice before I was actually on set, because otherwise I would never get it done, because I can only do one take with George. And, you know, I never blamed, you know, Jake Lloyd for it at all.
It's not his fault at all. And anyone who blames him is like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Isn't there even a thing where Natalie Portman couldn't get a acting job afterwards for the longest time for a similar reason?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was for a while. I do want to quote what Mark Hamill said. He said, I couldn't believe some of the things they wrote about the prequels, you know? I mean, really, beyond I didn't like it, not liking it, I'm still angry about the way they treated Jake Lloyd. From there, he says, he was only 10 years old, that boy, and he did exactly what George wanted him to do. Believe me, I understand clunky dialogue. So, like, remember, like, Jake Lloyd also had some of the best scenes in episode one. Like, the pod race scene, I think a lot of people agree, is one of the best things in episode one. Heck, there was a whole video game around it, and he does that masterfully. You know, take it, it's just vroom, vroom sounds and stuff like that, and it's not him. Like, I wish I was him in the pod race. So, but, you know, here's the thing, is that's how Hollywood is, you know. Once you do a film, especially a big budget film or a blockbuster film, you know, you're in the spotlight. And, you know, Mark Hamill went on to say, you know, he would never want his kids to be, you know, actors or actresses until they're at least 18 or something like that. Cause you definitely have to have thick skin in that industry, you know?
Oh yeah. So yeah, with certainty, I used to do, acting for commercials when I was younger, and I used to go out for like theater stuff. And the thing at the time was that I was very, very young, and my mum tried to shield me from most of it, but a lot of the time, because I was quite tanned and my hair was like more like ringlets when I was younger and dark, so people just didn't want to cast me in commercials. They wanted the like blonde-haired, blue-eyed, straight-haired little girls for all the commercials, because that's just what they wanted. And my mum used to try and shield me from, like, some of the worst stuff that they were saying, but yeah, absolutely, there was a lot of... There's a lot of stuff that is said, especially about child actors, that is really awful. And regardless of what you think of the prequels, and everyone knows I'm not a fan... I'm not that much of a fan of the prequels at all, but I know, certainly... That,
Metachlorians conversation didn't even hide it at all.
Yeah, but this is the thing, is that I will never say anything bad about Jake Lloyd because of that, at all, ever, because he was a kid, and he did what he could with it, but, like, the dialogue is just so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
It's, you know, it's the prequels. It's all right. That's kind of what they're known for. Moving on from that, I told you about this the other day, Danya. I don't know if you got a chance to see this, Caitlin. I posted it on our website. It is the 8-bit from Cineflex, or Cinefix, 8-bit version of Rogue One. Did you guys get a chance to watch this through?
Yeah. It's only about a minute and a half. So cute.
It's only about a minute long. So basically, if you don't get a chance, we'll link to it. It's on our website. But basically, it's an 8-bit version video game, like an NES style, you know, or arcade style version side scroller of Rogue One, where they go to Jeddah. You get to pick your character, which is obviously Jin.
And
then you find Saw Gerrera, and he tells you, and then you see Jeddah getting destroyed by the Death Star. She climbs up a wall, destroying, you know, stormtroopers as they go. They're dropping rocks on her and everything. It gets full on video game style. And then you see her dead father, who tells her, "I've hidden a weakness in the Death Star. Find the plans on Scarif." So then they go to Scarif and they go through, and you see Cassie and all that. It's literally the entire film, 8-bit style with music and everything. It's just absolutely awesome. And the best part is, like,
he's not dead when he says that, right?
No, he's dying. He's dying. You know,
You're like, her dead father. I'm like, yeah, that's morbid.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, he's not dead father. He's her dying father on the ground on, what was the planet they went to? Was it Edu? Yeah.
Edu.
I remember all these things. But yeah, so we signed it on DVD. I've only seen it four times. I've only seen it five. Jeez, I don't even remember how many times. Yeah, I've seen it five times in theaters now. But yeah, so, as an animation, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. It's worth checking out. Plus, it's really fun. I personally think the best part is the remixed audio, because it's the music from Rogue One done 8-bit style. And if you're a fan of, like,
Legend of Zelda
theme song, Mario Brothers theme song, you know, it's definitely worth a check out there.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. It was so, so, so cute. And also, I just really love 8-bit stuff anyway.
Yeah, who doesn't, right?
Sure.
Also, coming up soon, what do you call it? The last book in the Aftermath series, Aftermath Empire's End, is coming out at the end of this month. But Barnes & Noble has a very exclusive edition. If you are to go to Barnes & Noble and buy your copy there of Empire's End, it'll include a double-side pull-out poster with original art featuring Nora Wexley and Ray Sloan. Have you guys taken a look at these posters?
Yes.
They are really cool. Like, I really like the Nora Wexley one, Flying to Victory. You know, it's the good old war, you know, propaganda posters. I will say the Stand with the Empire, the Ray Sloan one, is really ominous. It's really scary looking. Like, I think it's the shading on the Imperial logo. That's what it is. Like, it's just like, it's very reminiscent of, like,
Nazi Germany.
Yeah, well, that's what it is, and I think that's why I just feel unsettled looking at it. But yeah,
it's because they absolutely are. They do very much invoke the propaganda of the time of World War II. The Empire one is invoking the themes of Nazi Germany, and the Stand with the New Republic one is very much in the colors and sort of style of, I guess, British propaganda. It looks very much like
the US and British propaganda, like the fight for victory, you know. Now, and it's like, these are really cool. Like, I like them a lot. I will say, I actually have not purchased the other two Aftermath books. and hardback, I bought them all digital. So I'm torn because I'm like, I want these posters, but I'd rather have it on my Kindle, which is what I can take with me everywhere at work and stuff. So I don't know. Do these posters exclusive through Barnes & Noble entice you guys to buy it through their website or through them?
Considering we don't have Barnes & Noble here.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm the only U.S. person. Where's Eric when I need him? But yeah. I love Barnes & Noble. They're the only big bookstore around in the U.S. anymore. We used to have Borders, and we even did MuggleCast, even did live podcasts at Borders, and those are all closed up now. So Barnes & Noble is the last big bookstore here in the U.S., and they offer some really cool posters. If you want to take a look at those, they are on our website, so definitely check it out. I will probably still buy mine through my Kindle, just because I can take it anywhere. And, you know,
wallpaper. As nice as the posters are, I probably wouldn't try and figure out a way to get them, only because I don't hate the Aftermath books, but I'm not exactly the biggest fan of them.
They're really good, but they're hard to read. It's just Chuck Wendig's style. Like it gets me. Like it's hard for me to read.
I like Chuck Wendig's other stuff. Like when he's not writing Star Wars, I actually find his style of writing a lot easier to read. But for some reason with his Star Wars novels, it's just so hard. It's a long slog. And the Aftermath books, I've said it before, they're always chock full of really interesting information about the Star Wars universe and the canon and just everything about it. It always has like really interesting little tidbits all the way through, but it feels a lot of the time like a chore to get to them. So
yeah. I will say the second book was more difficult for me to get through than the first one, but by the time I got to the epilogue, which had this flashback to, you know, Palpatine on Jakku, spoiler, I'm not gonna go any more there. It was really good. Like, yeah, by the end of it, I really enjoyed the book. And then they gave me just enough to make me like go like, I can't wait to the next book to find out more about this. So it's definitely one of those things where the series is good. It's worth a read. There's two already out. The Aftermath series, Empire's End, comes out at the end of this month. It gives you enough time to read it before the Thrawn book comes out. So I'll definitely pick that up as soon as it comes out.
Would it help to have it listened to for the audiobook?
Yeah, like I will audible? Tell you this. Yeah, no, I will tell you the audiobook. I actually have the audiobook of the first one, and I loved it. The person who reads it, I don't even know who it is off the top of my head right now. It's phenomenal. It was really good. And actually, that's what made it easier for me to get through the second book, I think, was just having the voices in my head from the audiobook, at least to me. But I don't know. It was just difficult for me to get through, but they're great stories and lots of great information if you're a Star Wars fan. I will say, though, at the same time, I think we had Bloodlines come out, which we felt was a stronger novel overall. But I'm excited for Empire's End and also just for these posters. So, Danya, tell me a little bit more about this other news we have with Josh Gad and Daisy Ridley.
Yes. So if no one has seen these videos yet, and I say videos, because there are now two. So Josh Gad is the voice of us all and got Daisy Ridley to come by his trailer. And he started asking her questions about The Last Jedi, like, who is The Last Jedi? Is Luke alive? Is Luke gonna die? Like, all of that sort of thing. And you can tell it's all in good humor and they're both playing along and so on, and Daisy pretends to get angry. It's great, but it's just really, really funny. Then this week he did a follow-up one where he got Daisy to come by again and was like, look, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry about everything that I did. look, let's just run our lines, let's run our scene, you know, here are the sides the director wanted me to give these to you. So it's like, so just go through these and answer honestly. That's what the director wanted you to answer. He wanted you to answer honestly. Literally the sides are, who is the last Jedi? Is Luke still alive? And I just, it was the smile that I needed this week. It was, they're both really just funny little videos, because you know that we would ask the same question.
Yeah, if you had a chance to, like, I just finished watching the second video. It's one of those things where, like, I don't know if I would ask them those questions. No. If I had to, you know, if I was able to be intimate in a small close quarters, hanging out, it might be more like, hey, let's be best friends forever. But it'd be, you know, definitely those questions of, you know, one of the questions was, you know, who's Rey's, you know, parents, which we all know is Luke Skywalker. And then we have
once a goddamn episode. It has to happen.
What? He did ask that. Who's Rey's parents? And she answered Luke Skywalker. No, she didn't. I'm sorry.
No, she didn't. In my head, she did. Listen to
me. In my head. Or if you don't watch the video, you can believe that she said Luke Skywalker. But yeah, no, like, I agree. These are all the questions we had. You know, we spent an entire episode last week talking about The Last Jedi. Who is it? We analyzed the color of the text. We did, you know, everything we can. I've even seen new memes pop up of everything, like with Luke saying, who's the last Jedi that lives, still around, you know, because he wants to live and not die also. And we've also seen the wake from his nap. So these videos were actually really cute, and I really like them. So I'm glad you put them in the news section, Danya.
Yes, I couldn't help it. I had to put it in. It was a little bit of a light in the week for me. So it was just something that made me smile and made my week a little bit more amusing. So yep. It's always a good thing to have something and that makes you smile.
Also, from one of our fans, Kristen Winters tweeted at us. Or did she tweet or email us? I don't remember where it came
she
from.
She tweeted us and she was like, us. This might be something that you would want to talk about. And
yeah, we didn't get to it last. We didn't get to it last week, but I definitely wanted to talk about it. Is Carrie Fisher has become the surprising face of the rebellion against Trump. So Vanity Fair ran an article. And I think, you know, and this is not really surprising. You know, this isn't surprising to me. One, of who Carrie Fisher is. Two, who her character Princess Leia is. And obviously the resistance and, you know, all that stuff that Carrie Fisher stood for and General Leia, Princess Leia stood for. And she definitely became, there's a series of tweets and pictures and stuff of against the Women's March that happened all over the U.S. country. You know, all, I guess the
I
US,
mean,
I don't have to say
it
country,
wasn't
the U.S.
It wasn't it was just everywhere. The U.S., though. It was everywhere. Yeah. There was the Women's March in London, and there was some in Canada, Australia, like literally
Africa.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It was everywhere. Yeah.
Where they had marching penguins as well, which was like the actual best thing that I saw. It was like penguins for women. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, you know, and it's not that surprising to me. But I do like that they tied things like "We will defeat the dark side." Some of the posters that came from it, "A woman's place is in the resistance," and here on Resistance Radio. I really liked it. I really like that they did this, and also something which I don't have written down, but I know next month they are going to have a tribute in L.A. to Carrie Fisher. Also,
oh,
that's
really great.
Yeah, I think
I
it's
love
gonna be.
That.
Yeah, so it's going to be just, you know, this is just, it's all very timely and really nice. And
yeah.
Do you guys have any thoughts on this beyond, like, I don't know what to say other than, like, it's not surprising to me, but I'm glad it's there. That's all I can say is, like, I'm happy. I like it. I'm glad. Yes.
It was really cool because Todd Fisher, Carrie Fisher's brother, actually spoke to Vanity Fair when, a lot of this stuff was coming out, like posters and images of Carrie and Leia were showing up on signs and posters for people in the Women's March. And when he was speaking to Vanity Fair, he said, like, for me, it meant carrying on Carrie's mission. She was a champion of women. No one can deny it. And yeah, so it's very much the same sort of feeling that Carrie Fisher as a person, and we spoke about it, I spoke about it a little bit, like, on the tribute episode that we did as well, that she is a very strong figure for a lot of women, and she gave avenues to a lot of people to talk about and be able to express themselves about things that maybe they had more difficulty doing, whether it was through her character as Leia or whether it was Carrie Fisher herself. So being able to talk about mental health issues, women's rights issues, all that sort of stuff. Like, Carrie Fisher became such a strong voice of all of that stuff because she was so honest about everything. So, having seen Leia become a face of this resistance is both a fitting tribute to everything that Carrie Fisher stood for through a character that Carrie Fisher embodied every single day, but also because Carrie Fisher was so vocal about this sort of stuff. So it is literally picking up the sort of the picket that she dropped and marching for her. So everyone is marching for her because she can't march for us anymore. So it's just this one thing that's just very poignant and beautiful to me, because the grief over Carrie Fisher was so strong, particularly for me, and for so many other people as well. Like, I've had a lot of conversations with people about it, but seeing people then take her image and just be like, pushing forward to say, you know, we're not going to stop fighting, much like Carrie and Leia will continue to do through everything that they've put out in the world already. Like, at the moment, my wallpaper on my computer is that A Woman's Place in the Resistance poster by Hayley Gilmore. If you guys haven't seen this poster, it's excellent, it's beautiful, and you can see it at HayleyGilmore.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes as well. But yeah, just everyone with these images of Leia and quotes and just everything. It's a lot. And I love that she's become like almost a unifying image of resisting oppression, because
she's become a symbol, even.
She like has become a symbol. She's a symbol of hope.
So it's no longer help me, Obi-Wan. It's, you know, it's help me, Princess Leia, General Leia. I love it.
But then it's not even help me, General Leia, you're my only hope. She is literally just embodying the hope, like, inside of everyone else.
She is the hope. She is the
hope. She is.
She is, so I love it.
Yeah, so she is literally becoming, or continuing to be the outlet for so many people for their resistance, and basically making them strong, because sometimes it's hard to find it just in yourself, and having something to channel that through can be easier, and Carrie was always there to help us, so... Yeah. It's incredible.
It's so. It's a deep topic that I'm sure we can dive much further into, you know, more than if it was just, you know, not just a news topic today. But I'm really happy just seeing the posters, the signs, and just how she's become kind of the center of this movement, not just for women, but for everyone who believes in it. So I thank you, Carrie, for being so strong and being who you were. All right. Spotlight topic, everybody. The cold, chilly planet of Hoth. This is the first spotlight topic we've done on a planet. And I really like Hoth as a good example, because it comes up, you know, I mentioned a couple things. That there's a couple different arguments about Hoth and what it kind of showed, especially in the films. But let's just a quick rundown. Hoth, we first saw in Empire Strikes Back, episode 5. Duh, right? You guys remember, it's cold.
It was very cold.
Yeah, it just came from there.
Right? to quote Han Solo, there isn't enough life on this ice cube to fill a space cruiser, obviously. But Hoth is the sixth planet of the remote Hoth system, a very desolate world covered in ice and snow.
Sounds familiar. And,
I know, right? like the good old place of Canada. Mm-hmm. Hoth is probably best known to the Star Wars fandom as the place where Echo Base is located, which is one of my favorite bases. Echo Base, come in. Like, I just love that name. Is Echo Base. Echo Base, I love it. Anyway, and also the big battle, and also the Battle of Hoth, which has that iconic AT-AT or AT-AT attack. Quick trivia question. How many AT-ATs or AT-ATs were at the Battle of Hoth? Ooh.
I'm just like that going,
I know,
oh God.
I know. All right, first fan to tweet at me, I will say high five or Y5 because I can give you one over the internet, Y5. But yeah, I know how many that is. But yeah, it's definitely iconic, especially when you think of the games like Battlefront. The Battle of Hoth is the one they showed off because it was just so cool. So Hoth. All right. In Hoth, what do you guys want to talk about with Hoth? Because there's just so many really cool things here. My favorite is we also saw Luke on Hoth. He got to use the Force for the first time to move something.
And that was before he even met Yoda, too.
Yeah, that was before Yoda. And he wasn't trained as a Jedi. So actually, mm-hmm. I think this is interesting. The first time, you know, on Hoth, Luke uses the Force. He remembers what Obi-Wan Kenobi taught him. He is, you know, he's on his Tauntaun riding along, and a Wampa comes and attacks him, puts him, hangs him upside down. I don't know how the Wampa hangs him upside down. Like, we never really learned it. Like, does he spit or something like that and, like, freeze it? But he hangs him upside down, and Luke's lightsaber, of all things, his hat didn't fall off, his goggles didn't fall off, his blaster didn't fall off, but his lightsaber fell off.
And in a neatly laid spot, too.
You know, that's how lightsabers fall. We saw, you know, he fly at a ray the same way. So it's a very special lightsaber. But it was just out of reach. Excuse me, I feel like there needs to be a movie to explain how the lightsaber fell. You know, just something like that. Hey, they explained the exhaust port now, so they can explain the lightsaber falling. Oh, God, I'm being really sarcastic today. I'm sorry, everybody. But yeah, so Luke is hanging upside down. Again, we still don't know how he's upside down. But he uses the Force to call his lightsaber back. He uses telekinesis for the very first time in the films, in canon officially, because there's no official books that take place in between that time frame, at least not right now, that are still canon. And he's able to cut himself down, and he cuts off the arm of the Wampa, which I think we talked about last week in the special editions. That was like the one thing I was not super excited about, with the Wampa getting his arm cut off and jumping up and down, going, ow, my arm. Yeah, special editions. I love them. I hate them. You know, they're different.
Yeah.
Greedo shot first.
Equal measure that, like we've been saying, there are certain things about them that I can appreciate and do also stand by as being like, actually, yes, that should have been in it from the start. Biggs. And that scene with Biggs, basically, is just the only thing I'm talking about there, and the windows in Cloud City. But
you keep forgetting, yeah. Jedi rocks in Jabba the Hutt's palace. Jedi rocks, such a good song. I do like the song, actually, but I don't necessarily like the animation. Anyway, but yeah, back to Hoth. So yeah, it's kind of cool that Luke uses the Force here. And it might be that Hoth is, you know, we talked about using the Force in a couple different ways before. But, you know, Hoth is supposed to be a system that is devoid of human form, at least according to Captain Piet to Admiral Ozzel when they go ahead and discover it. And that probe droid got destroyed. So, you know, Luke is by himself using the Force. Is it because he's surrounded by, we talked about midichlorians a couple episodes, is surrounded by life in the Wampas and Tauntauns that are out there? Or is it just that he's serene and he's able to focus? What do you guys think inspired Luke on Hoth? Is it the cold, like the need to survive?
Well, and that's the thing, because I recently watched a clip of him doing it. And at first he struggles trying to reach for it, like physically. And then he just all of a sudden just settles down and then just reaches out his arm and, like, struggles to grab it. And that's when the Wampa kind of stops eating the Tauntaun and is like, oh, you're awake. I can eat you now.
Yeah, the I will say, I remember being a little kid watching this scene, and it always got my heart rate going. Because, like, the music is getting there, and you hear the chunk-chunk of the lightsaber kind of moving a little bit, and you hear the sounds of the Wampa kind of, like, eating off-screen and everything. And, like, you're like, come on, Luke, you could do it! Luke, you could do it! Like, I always got really excited for this scene, and I don't know, maybe that's why I have this love for Hoth as a planet. Also, like, not to go too side, now I'm seeing, and you guys just get me talking and I just start talking about it, but like, Hoth was my favorite planet in Star Wars The Old Republic, you know, a video game, because you could just explore this massive white planet. It's just awesome. So Hoth, I like you. I like that Luke was able to move objects, but you did mention that we also saw Ben Kenobi here, which was interesting. The first time I saw it, and this is the first time we saw a Force ghost on screen. Obviously, we kind of learn more about Force Ghosts in the prequels, which is before this timeline-wise, if you will. And we see him at the end of Endor and Return of the Jedi. But this is the first time we see a Force Ghost of Ben Kenobi. And of course, it happens like when Luke's about to pass out. So in my mind, I always, like, I knew it was a Force Ghost, but I was also wondering, could Luke have been hallucinating? What do you guys think prompted Ben Kenobi to reach out to Luke at that time? Out of all the other times, like, versus him, like, sleeping in bed, hanging out, you know, where he's warm with a jacket on, you know, and it had to be when he was, like, gonna die. Like, why was that the moment?
Well, I mean, because it's the same as the trench run, is it not? When it's absolutely imperative that he needs that help, and he doesn't know how to... He's got all of this power. Luke has got all of this power, and he doesn't know how to channel it or use it because he hasn't been trained properly. So at times of, like, peril, where it's down to the wire almost, it's just that nudge back in the right direction again, I guess. Like,
maybe that's the reminder he needed to, rather than reaching for it physically, but through the Force.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. My only argument and complaint about this, and this is maybe me just kind of reading too much into it, is, you know, Luke has had 3 years from the Battle of Yavin. Like, Empire, the biggest time gap, short of from the prequels, going from, like, episode 1 to episode 2, is, and then obviously episode 6 to episode 7, and 3 to 4, but... Okay, now I'm thinking, like, maybe it's not the biggest time gap. But compared to, like, episode 7 to episode 8, or even episode 5 to episode 6, between A New Hope and Empire, there is, like, a 3-year time gap. So, like, why did Ben Kenobi let Luke flail as a non-trained Jedi with a saber that can cut off his head, you know, like he doesn't know how to use this thing, but he carries it around, he hasn't been trained, and he takes the time to, like, when he's almost dead, going like, oh crap, I forgot to let him know he needs to go to Yoda. Like, you know, you think he would have told him sooner to go see Yoda or to train or do something else. Do you guys have any thoughts on that, or am I just like,
maybe it just wasn't the right time?
Okay, now there is maybe a book.
Maybe he had a mature... Well, because they also had to move the Rebel base, so maybe he was a little bit busy.
That's true. They had to move the Rebel base from there.
He's moving house, okay?
Gosh, all right. You know, it's like The Sims, he's playing house or something. But, you know, I will say, there is a book that takes place between A New Hope.
He's too busy kissing his sister.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that part yet. A little family loving. Nothing's wrong with that. Never mind, yeah, there is a lot of things wrong with that, but about Chihuahua, regardless. Anyway, but yeah, you know, like, there is something that takes place. We do know in, I think it is Heir to the Jedi, what's the one of the new canon Star Wars books? Now I have to look it up. But there is a book where Luke is on a mission for the Rebel Alliance, and he stops off on a planet, looking for more Jedi artifacts and stuff like that, kind of like what he does in Force Awakens, so it makes sense. But yeah, so obviously... Ben Kenobi's ghost comes to talk to him, and Luke visits the Bacta tank after he gets mauled by the, what do you call it, Wampa there?
Wampa, or Bumbles from, like, the Rudolph.
Yeah.
Christmas
the Rudolph, the claymation animation. But yeah. What's interesting is this is the first time we saw a Bacta tank, and we also see it in Rogue One, which is what Vader is currently floating in before he hops into his armor to make fun of Krennic in Rogue One. And I know, Caitlin, you were like, oh, I never put the two and two together. Like,
yeah.
Makes sense, yeah? So the back to tank, you know, that's you know, there was a whole back to war in the EU, so I'm very familiar with it. And then, yeah, we get to that Luke and Leia kissing. Which, you know, here's the thing. It's like, honestly, she was trying to make Han jealous. Like, the whole thing was that, and Luke was just a little too smug about it. Like, do you guys agree with me on that? Or am I just, like, fanboying? Oh, yeah.
Well, especially since she went to look at Han Solo's face after she did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was absolutely just to get under Han's skin. Because but also, it, like, it says more about, I feel like, George Lucas than it does about Luke and Leia. Let's just be clear here.
You know, I guess you're probably right about that. But yeah, so Hoth definitely is the setting of a lot of memorable moments, specifically, obviously, in Empire Strikes Back. But I do want to talk about the super weapon that is on Hoth. Now, for those of you who don't know what I'm referring to, there was an article that came out a while ago. Someone talking about how the Rebel Alliance had their own super weapon, and asking why didn't they build more of these. So, when the Empire comes to Hoth, and the Rebel Alliance has to leave Echo Base in a hurry, the idea is that these transports are going to be away. And you even hear them, like, the first transport's away, and everyone's like, yeah! As they're getting into their snowspeeders, Luke and Dak are going to load up to go take on the Empire. And what they use is they use a weapon called an ion cannon. And the ion cannon fires two blasts. It hits the Star Destroyer that would be preventing the Rebel, you know, convoy, the ships, to escape. By disabling all of its weapons and disabling, you know, the power on it, right? These are, and that's what kind of is there, you know, the ion weapons. And Y-Wing fighters have ion cannons mounted to them. So my question is, why didn't they use this ion cannon anywhere else?
Because when they go low, we go high. What makes them any better than the Empire if they continue to commit mass destruction on the same scale? Yes, maybe as a last resort they can use it, but if escalation for escalation's sake, because they don't have any other option, is like where they're going, then they do they use a super weapon to wipe out a large number of people, most of whom are going to be civilians. Then the Empire escalates. Then they escalate. Then the Empire escalates. And it just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. So,
but it's
a lot harder to stop and be like, we won't use it, than it is to just needlessly use it.
Yeah, but here's, like, the thing, is the Empire already has a weapon that destroys entire planets. So, you know, an EMP style weapon that disables a ship so you can run and hide or help destroy it, I don't feel is like a super weapon on top of a super weapon. Like, I think it's a safer version than the weapon that they have two of that destroys whole planets.
But just a question, because, like, it's supposed to kind of, like, cut off electrical power, right?
Yeah.
How do their life support systems work on their ships, then?
Well, but it doesn't do it permanently. Right? They get their power back. If the ship is disabled, you know, how do you, you know, you jumpstart it, right? You turn everything. It's like a circuit breaker, right? You flip your circuit breaker on the on the Mon Cal ship or the Death Star, but, you know, you have to go down to the, you know, I don't really know, but it doesn't do it permanently. It's not permanently disabled, but basically it disrupts all electronic systems. And actually, you saw the U-Wings in Rogue One use it too to take out the AT-AT or the AT-ACTs. That's how they were able to take those the transports out fairly quick. So, you know, I feel like, you know, in Empire, it brought this super weapon the Rebels had, and just they didn't use it. And I get, like, maybe there was some reason that we just don't know, but come on. They had a weapon they could use. Well, they used it to escape. They had it Rogue One.
The one other thing that I'm thinking is that the Rebel Alliance, as we know, has significantly less resources than the Empire at their disposal. So in order to keep continually powering a weapon of that strength, surely it takes quite a significant amount of resources, ones that are not readily available to them, versus the Empire, who have strongholds and full operations on multiple planets where they can, as we saw in Rogue One, literally just farm everything out and be like, cool, this is all ours now. And, you know, when that happens as well, they're removing all of the resources to power as well. So there's nothing left for anyone else to take.
Which brings up another question. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but we also saw it in Clone Wars.
Yes, we did. General Grievous and them had it.
Yeah, so the Separatists had it, and then in Empire Strike Back, the Rebels had it. So technically, shouldn't the Empire have access to this, and they don't use it either?
Yeah. Well, but the Empire, I don't think the Empire needs to use it. You got to remember, the Empire is the stronger force here. They use things like tractor beams to, pull ships in. Why would you disable a ship when you could just destroy it? Or heck, why would you want to disable ships when you could just destroy a whole planet?
So, but like, if you know that weapon exists, wouldn't you come up with something that, like, kind of defends yourself against it being used if they know the Rebels have it?
Yeah, I can see that, but I would see that, but then why didn't they use it, like, more in Empire or even in A New Hope? Because we know they had it before and after. The only thing is, the only thing I can argue and say, like, maybe someone knows more, is in Outpost Beta, the V-150 planetary ion cannon that is there on Hoth that the Rebel Alliance uses to fire twice to disable the Star Destroyers in the path of the fleet that is trying to evacuate from Hoth base. Wow, I said that exactly what it is. Maybe it needs some type of power source that we just don't see, because it's essentially a ball sticking out of, like, the rocks with, like, a blaster cannon thing sticking out. My only thing I can think of, and this is kind of going to EU and video game lore and stuff like that, is maybe it's using something like so much energy that they can't reproduce it except on planets like Hoth or somewhere else where they're using, like, thermal energy or something like that from the planet's core or something. Like, that's the only thing I can think of.
But Clone Wars, it was on a ship.
It was a different type of weapon on a ship too. And it was a very slow moving type pulse. It was a big circle that was kind of purple versus, like, essentially a blaster that ended up taking out a ship with, two little bolts. So I think the Clone Wars one and the one the Rebel Alliance have are different but similar technology. And the Clone Wars one was very similar to more of a Death Star style array where it kind of had all these things feed into it. But yeah, well, I don't know.
And I think it was newly developed too, because the Republic didn't know about it.
Yeah. So it was
just developing it.
Yeah, they're developing it, and they just happened upon it in Clone Wars. But it was just, I don't know. On Hoth, it was something that, I thought about, and I thought it was very interesting that the Rebel Alliance had this weapon here, the Planet Defender, that they called it. And, I don't know. Nothing else about this ship, the thing they didn't do. But it's apparently about 40 meters wide. So it's, it's buried 40 meters. So it's a pretty big, orb. It almost looks like the orbs on the on the clone troopers in Attack of the Clones, like the little turret gun circle things that they had.
Mm.
So very reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hoth is a interesting place. It's got wampas, it's got tauntauns, and amazing weapons that no one else takes with them when they leave. Right? So also, we have some interesting things on Hoth, to talk about with Hoth. Specifically, the Funko that was released, was it last month, Danya?
It was last month. It was January's Smuggler's Bounty Box was Hoth-themed. Or Empire Strikes Back themed technically, but so they had a deluxe pop in this box, which was Han Solo with a tauntaun on Hoth, and it was so cool. It's literally one of the coolest pops that they have done in Smuggler's Bounty. I absolutely loved it, and it just looks so cool. I'll post a link to it, but just the whole box was awesome.
It's adorable.
I'll tell you this. I'm a little disappointed, though, and I'll tell you why. Because you can't open the Tauntaun and Luke Skywalker pop out.
Like, God's sake,
like puppy pocket pal.
Well, come on, think about it. If Han Solo has his Tauntaun, what's going to happen to that Tauntaun? You know what happened in the film. You know, they smell bad on the outside. They smell worse on the inside. And it's because, you know, Han Solo went out riding on his Tauntaun to find Luke. And then they needed to stay warm. And, you know, good old Tauntaun there, you know, doesn't have a spot to get Luke out of. So, mm-hmm. No, but I will say that this Funko Pop is very cool. I'm a big fan of the Funkos. I only have a few of them myself just because I have a ridiculous amount of Mighty Mugs. If anyone remembers the Star Wars Mighty Mugs, that's what I collected. And I have every single one but one. And I can't find it anywhere. Eventually I will. But yeah, so anything else about Hoth? I think we covered a lot of it. I'm sure we skipped something. Oh, we skipped the Battle of Hoth. How can we skip that? Jeez, I mentioned it.
Touch on it briefly.
I did. I didn't ask how many, you know, did you guys figure out how many AT-ATs were there? I'll tell you.
No.
It's five. No. So those of you who actually listened.
I was going to guess
six. Nah, it was five. You see three in like the big shots of it all the time, but it is five when you get the really wide shot. So anyone who's actually listened all the way to this part of the episode, good job. You can tweet at me now. I've just told you the answer. but the Battle of Hoth was actually a really interesting battle out of all the ones that we had seen previously, because the only battles we had seen previously was the Battle of Yavin, which was completely space fight. This was in orbit on a planet, and like I said, you know, with Battlefront, this was like such an iconic battle because you're on the ground, there's ground troopers, there's snow troopers, you have Darth Vader on the ground walking like a, you know, badass like he is, you know, just cutting people up using the Force. Maybe that's the video game, not the movie, but really, like, you have this amazing thing, and you also have, like, you know, the ships, like the T-47 snow speeders here, and you have, you know, Wedge Antilles there, right, Danya? See what I did?
Sorry, new phone, who dis?
But, you know, you have... Hey, Wedge is the person to take out the first AT-AT, mainly because Dak was dead in Luke's ship. But, you know, you have the, you know, the Rebel Alliance taking down the AT-ATs with the snowspeeders using their tow cables, you know, wrapping up their feet, having them fall down, which, you know, we even saw recently as in Civil War with Spider-Man saying, hey, remember that old movie, Empire Strikes Back, right? See?
So cute. I love that moment. See, everyone's like, how old is this kid?
It's not that old of a movie. I wasn't around when it was made, but it's okay. I still love it. But yeah, so, you know, you have the Battle of Hoth there, and the Rebel Alliance is trying to escape. You also have Luke taking out an AT-AT himself by using a harpoon cable and himself climbing up and slashing underneath with his lightsaber and throwing a thermal detonator up there. Like, that's pretty significant when you think about, like, how one guy took out an entire AT-AT. Like, I can see how the legends actually play into canon now. Because, like, if you imagine you're, you know, a rebel trooper on the ground and you see Commander Skywalker on his own having been shot out of the sky, take out an entire AT-AT that's bearing down on your position, like, you'd be like, this guy is a Jedi. He does some amazing, like, I can just imagine, like, the stories of legends being actually tied into canon, just like with this battle. Like, do you guys agree or no? Okay, sure.
I was waiting for Danya to respond.
I was like leaving you a moment to respond. I can't always like keep up with Mikey's nonsense.
You know what? I'm gonna stop here. I'm gonna stop with this nonsense. Apparently I'm just talking to talk. Thank you. I appreciate it, Danya. You don't agree that Luke would be Like, can you imagine? Maybe I'm just the fanboy, like, thinking
that. Well, even, like, because I'm still slowly making my way through Clone Wars, but even watching when Ahsoka and Anakin, like, jump these giant leaps and get up on top of the wall, and the rest of the troops on the ground are like, oh, right, how are we supposed to get up there?
Yeah, like, even in Saw Gerrera said it in Rebels. Like, you know, Kanan holds this, you know, rock formation across so Rex and Saw can get across this, you know, canyon, if you will, type thing. And then Saw turns to Rex, like, how is he going to get across? And then Kanan just lands in front of them. Like, it's an amazing feat, something that is just awesome. And, like, Luke is already doing that, being not trained before he goes off to Dagobah to actually learn the ways of the Force with Yoda. You know, he's had almost no, he's had zero training other than he believes in the Force, which I think the belief is probably his strongest thing here with, you know, and I think Hoth was a good proving ground for him, which is maybe why he got that, you know, next step there.
But yeah, I mean, it also kind of bodes like an interesting like counterpoint to Rey in The Force Awakens, because a lot of people had the criticism that, you know, she picks stuff up too quickly and she's just too, like, she's like a Mary Sue, blah 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 blah. We've already debunked that argument like outright multiple times.
Oh yeah, many times on here.
But then you look at the parallels between her and Luke and the way that just intuitively they know what to do. That is, it's a really beautiful parallel between the two of them, because they work on instinct without training. Okay. And with training, it heightens it and hones it. But the raw kind of talent that they have, that instinctive ability to be able to tap into everything, that's what makes them special. So,
second time, Mikey, are you going to say it?
No, I'm not going to say it right now. But we do, it's because we already know that, you know, Luke is Rey's dad. So,
yeah.
Yeah, right? So, you know, gosh, I'm sorry. I'll stop tonight. I'll stop today.
Well, I won't stop.
It's a lie.
It's not. Truth is not a lie. It's not an alternate fact. I'm sorry. I will afterwards. But yeah, so Hoth, it's the opening sequence to Empire Strikes Back. It does hold a special place in my heart, at least as a planet. Let us know what you think about Hoth, because I really want to hear what people think about the battle on Hoth, Echo Base, just because, you know, it's all this white stuff, you know, the white walls and everything. And do you remember the outtakes? There was supposed to be a room, maybe I'm thinking of a video game. There's supposed to be a room full of Wampas that they had caged. Was that an outtake or is that in the video game? That was in Shadows of the Empire, since no one's talking.
I was going to be like, I'm pretty sure that sounds like a video game scenario.
Yeah.
All right, so that was probably in Shadows of the Empire when you're like Dash Rendar running through Echo Base and there's a room that it says danger, but you go in there anyway because there's like a... Yeah, I know it's Shadows of the Empire because I'm like vividly remembering it right now. There's a room you go in there and it's got like an extra life or a health pack or something, but it's got like five Wampas in there, so you don't want to actually fight them. So check out Shadows of the Empire, you know, the old N64 game, and play Hoth there. All right. Thank you all for listening to me ramble and on about Hoth. I love it. I love all the planets of Star Wars. Can we all be in Star Wars? Anyway, thank you for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. As always, I am Mikey B. And yes,
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
I wasn't done yet. I was just going to say, and yes, Luke is Rey's father. But that's all right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Let your deeds give hope and comfort to the living. Do your best in city or in swamp land. Peace over anger, honor over hate. At the end of all your days, one Jedi waits for you, with the dust of Jedi bones piled high like parsnips on his plate. with the dust of Jedi bones piled up like parsnips on his plate. Specifically just their bones, all the soft parts you can keep. It's the bones that have the calcium, so he says. The long feast will be filmed for mass consumption. The cameras Ryan's got these days are unimaginably high res. Despair not for the end that waits for you. Fear not the fire in which your flesh must burn. All the Jedi from all the planets in this putrid universe get eaten by this last one, and now it's your turn. They get eaten by this last one, and now it's your turn. Bones, 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 bones. Bones, 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 bones. The ultimate Jedi, who wastes all the other Jedi, has eaten up all their bones. All their bones.